You are listening to BensTorah.com.
Going to be dealing with a very important topic, a topic that has major medical halachic ramifications, and the sugya is one of the sugyas contained in Masechtas Avodah Zarah, which is part of our Daf Yomi cycle. It goes back to Daf Chav Zayin Amud Aleph and Beis, where the Gemara deals with the topic in a different context and is applied by our poskim to a much more modern type of venue. So let's get into the topic quickly and get to the Iker issues of tonight's discussion. For who knows how many years already that I've been giving shurim over here in the shul, many times over the years I've discussed the halacha of when it comes to practicing medicine according to the strictures of halacha. And the Gemara I always quote, which is on the first page of Yomar Mekomos in front of you, is the Gemara Bava Kama Pehei, where Rabbi Shmuel darshens on the pasuk Rapi Rape Bikan Shenitun Rishus L'Rofil Arapos, that he points out that in that pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim, the Rabbeinu Shem gave us divine permission to practice medicine to cure people from their disease. I pointed out over the years that even though the word reshus is used, permission, that in this specific context, it's not just a reshus, but as Chazal and the Ramban says in his Perush to this specific Gemara, which you have in your Mar Mekomos as well on the next page, he calls it a reshus de mitzvah, which means an obligatory halachic divine privilege of practicing medicine to save life. He calls it a reshus de mitzvah, says this explicitly in quotation 11a over here, which means it's not that you have an option to practice medicine if you know medicine, but if somebody is in medical need and you're a doctor, you're obligated according to halacha to practice medicine to try to cure this person and save this person's life if his life is at stake or her life is at stake. Now, there's the theological permissibility. Also, Chazal said there's no difference, as Tosfos says on the first page, of whether this is a humanly inflicted wound that was inflicted upon you by a human being or a divinely inflicted disease like cancer and such. It doesn't make a difference. The Rabban Hashem does what the Rabban Hashem wants to do, but you as a doctor, as a medical personality, if you have the knowledge and the talent and the kochos, and quite obviously the skills that are needed to cure this person from disease, you are mechuyev according to Torah law to practice medicine to cure the specific person. The Gemara tells us in Masechtas Brachos, not only is there a chiv upon the doctor or the other medical personnel to cure the person from illness if they have a sickness, but the Gemara Brachos and Daf Samech says there is likewise an obligation on the chola to search and seek out a doctor to take care of their medical problem. And therefore, if God forbid a person sick doesn't feel well and doesn't search and seek out a doctor to take care of their medical needs and necessities, and as a result of them ignoring the problem, they ultimately end up dying, that chola who could have searched and found a doctor to take care and didn't do that and allowed illness to overtake them and they die because of it, is chayiv in shemayim, as if they committed suicide, mischayiv benafsho, and that's the way the halacha, in fact, is recorded in the Shulchan Aruch in Yerodeya, when this halacha is brought down, halacha lamasa. So there's an obligation upon the patient, obligation upon the doctor. If there is a medical need that has to be taken care of, they're obligated, based upon Rapi Arape, to involve themselves in the medical care of this specific person. That's number one. Number two, besides the pasuk of Rapi Arape, there's another Gemara on the third page, which is entitled page 12a over here in the Mar Mekomos, which tells us that there are a whole bunch of other psukim that deal with the mandate to practice medicine with a safe person who's in a state of endangerment, whether medical endangerment or physical endangerment. Like an example, a person's drowning in a river and somebody who is an expert swimmer and has the capacity and energy to jump in to save them, And Kod obviously has the stamina, has the skill, has the knowledge, and realizes that they, if they do jump in, will be able to save the person from drowning, as one example, or a person is about to be jumped upon by an animal, where this person can save them, who's watching what's going on. This has nothing to do with medical skill, this is just Hatzolos Nefashos in a broad-based way. We're about to be mugged and I can intervene and prevent the person from being mugged. In all these cases, there are two more psukim the Gemara adds to the picture. One is the pasuk of Hashivoslo, the mitzvah Hashavas Aveda, and the Gemara is Mechadish. Hashavas Aveda means not only giving the person back their lost animals or lost objects, but Hashavas Agufu, giving a person back their body, their being, their essence, is also a mitzvah Hashavas Aveda. In fact, the Midrash says Hashavas Aveda is a guf of human being. It's perhaps the highest form of Hashavas Aveda. So you have another mitzvah asay to practice medicine based upon Hashivosolo. But there is also a los asay, which is critical for tonight's discussion. And that is the Gemara says, besides Hashivosolo, there's a law of lo sa'amod al damriacha. You're not allowed to stand by, the Gemara says, on 12a, when the person's life is at stake. And whatever you have to do to save this person's life, and if you can't do it yourself, but you have to spend your own money to hire individuals who perhaps can save them in your stead because you don't have the capacity, the lo sa'amod is mechayiv you to do such. So we therefore see when it comes to inyanim of pikuach nefesh, of saving life, we have rapi yarape, we have the concept of hashivosola, we have the concept of samad al damriyacha, and that means there is a halachic obligation, both the teres aseis and the teres los aseis, to involve yourself as a doctor and patient or a person who's a matzol nitzol in the actual activities of Hatzolos Nefashos to save a person who's in danger. It's a biblical obligation, and in Shemayim, if you don't act the way you're supposed, which means if in fact the doctor or the matzol does not matzol the person, you know, it's none of my business. There are other doctors, other people around, but the other problem is the other doctors and other people aren't around. They might exist in the world, but they're not here. So the halachi is the doctor who is able to save and is in the position to save at that point in time and does not do what they're supposed to do, or a matzel who could have been matzel somebody and does not matzel them, and they could have been matzel them, so in Shemayim they will be considered as if you caused this person's death. That's how far the halacha goes, and that's also codified in your day in the Shulchan Aruch when these halachas are brought down. So under normal circumstances, therefore, the practicing of medicine and the treatment of patients, whether the life is at stake or the life is not at stake, is the halachic incumbency, the mechuyev to do such. And this is a given based upon the piske halachos brought down by the Rishonim and the Poskim in their respective treatises. Now, one of the interesting phenomena that is brought down on page 12b in the Maariv Mekomos you have in front of you is a very interesting question that is posed by Rav Chaim HaKohen, one of the French Balei Tosfos, where he asks a very simple question, and that is, if Hashivosolo gives us the theological permission to save somebody's life and the medical and physical mandate of Pekuach Nefesh to save human beings from their illness, so why, in fact, did the Rabbanu Shem have another pasuk, Rapi, Rapi, Hashem is giving us a Rishus, L'Rafu, L'Rapos? We could have derived all of that from the Hashivosolo, which is a much more all-inclusive type of statement that means both medical salvation and non-medical salvation is mandated upon people who are capable of taking care of this person and saving them. As the Rambam says, Hashivosolo, whether you save them with your physical might, or you save them with your money, you save them with the knowledge of medicine you possess, all of that is included under Hashivosolo. So why in the world do I need a special pasuk of Rapi Yerape? So says Rav Chaim HaKohen, a very interesting chiddush, which you'll see how this plays into the big issue tonight. He says there is a tremendous chiddush in medicine when it comes to saving life that Rapa Rapa teaches you that I would not have known from Hashivosolo. Listen to this very carefully, because this is a very important nakuda in the bigger picture of tonight's shiur. When you have a person drowning in a river, or a person about to be mugged or mauled, and you step in to save that person, the person who you're trying to save, the one who's the nitzal, the one who you're attempting to save, is in no way being more endangered by your involvement in trying to be matzel them. If anything, the one who's in danger now is the one who's trying to be matzel, because it could be that in their good machshava to try to save this person, they might drown with the other guy, or they might be mauled by the animal as well, or they might be mugged by the muggers who are trying to mug that person. So if anything, the matzil is putting themselves in endangerment to save the nitzel, but the person who they're trying to save is not in any more danger whether you are saving them or not. They're in the same level of danger. Masha Enkein, says Rabbi Chaim HaKohen, when you're involved in medical treatment of a patient and you're administering very, very dangerous types of drugs or medicines to try to save this person, or perhaps you're involved in different types of medical procedures like today's surgeries and such, where quite obviously speaking, all of this stuff has the capacity to save you, but it also has the capacity to kill you. That's why there's a requirement of you having informed consent before the medical personnel under normal circumstances can treat you. So they should realize, you should realize the consequences of the good and the bad, and you have to sign off that I am basically taking the risk and therefore giving you permission to do what has to be done. So therefore, I might have thought, says Rabbi Chaim HaKohen, that since to cure a person medically, whether through medical care or surgical care, I am momentarily putting the nitzal, the patient, into greater sakana than they were, if I would not have involved myself and let nature take its course, how do I know I have a right as a medical professional to put them into greater sakana through that operative procedure? Or put them into greater sakana by basically giving them that medicine or giving them that chemotherapy or that radioactive therapy? How do I know God gave me the permission in my Hatzalah to do that from Hashivosala? I would not know that. That is why the Gemara says in Baba Kama, Rapi Arape, dealing with refuah's medical care, Hashem says, I'm giving you a rishus, a permissibility, as part of your obligation to practice medicine, to put the patient momentarily in endangerment, if that's what has to be done, even greater endangerment, in order to potentially cure them from the illness. That's why he points out, the Gemara uses the word rishus, even though there's an obligation to practice medicine, but God is giving you a permissibility as a doctor, as a nurse, as a PA, as a medical professional, as a dentist, whatever part of medical care you're involved with, is to do procedures upon the patient which momentarily put them in momentary, even greater sakana, where there are some people who never survive, even though it's a minority, but nevertheless, even in greater sakana, in order to hopefully give them a cure. So therefore, the Gemara in Baba Kama gives you a chiddush that medicine has, that regular physical salvation with physical brawn, you would not know from the Pasuk Hashivosala. So therefore, medicine allows you to put the patient in greater endangerment based upon Rapi Arape, based upon that Gezeres HaKosav. That's the Chiddush of the Gemara, according to Chaim HaKohen, as he says on page 12b in Yomarim HaKamos. Now with that little introduction, Rabbi Isai, we're not coming to the major topic of tonight's discussion. What is interesting and fascinating, if you now turn to the next page, which is page 19 and 20, the Gemara in Masechtes Avodah Zarah tells us that medical care was not always the way it is today, but there was a point in time in world history for thousands of years where there wasn't really a true governmental regulation of medical care taking place any place around the world. Nobody as an organization, or for that matter even a governmental agency, really regulated what doctors or medical professionals did when it came to in actuality treating patients. And therefore, for that reason, The Gemara tells us in Masechtas Avodah Zarah on this page number 19, which is Daf Chav Zayin Amud Aleph, that when it comes to using non-Jewish doctors at the time of the Mishnah, at the time of the Gemara, and especially if this non-Jewish doctor or non-Jewish practitioner, male or female, it's really irrelevant, was known to have a tremendous anti-Semitic attitude towards the Jewish people, there was always a possibility that when you come to them for medical cure, they, under the guise of medical cure, will kill you. And then say, what do you want from me? I mean, treating people with medicine always has dangers with it. So their real agenda of killing you because of anti-Semitism will basically be covered over by saying, I'm treating this person with medical care. So the Mishnah says explicitly that when it comes to doctors without governmental licensing or supervision, Bizman HaMishnah, Bizman HaGemara, where there was tremendous anti-Semitism, under normal circumstances, I could not go to that doctor for the fear that instead of curing me, they might kill me, and therefore, for that reason, I should stay away. The Gemara later on says that I can use them as my veterinarian to take care of my animals, but I can't use them as my personal doctor to take care of me. And that's a normal non-Jew at that time who practiced medicine. However, if you are a non-Jew who is a doctor but is a worldwide renowned specialist, that means you have an incredible reputation at stake. So there Chazal have another principle of lomara umen umnase, a person who's a professional, has an incredible reputation and an incredible type of practice, even though they might hate somebody or hate a specific group of people, ain't gonna jeopardize their panasa, their reputation, and who they are just because they have a certain animus against a certain group of people or against a certain person. They're not gonna take that risk. So therefore, Chazal tell us that Bizmana Gemara, if you were a Rofe Mumcha Baki, who had an incredible worldwide reputation, he's not like a regular Goyish or Goy doctor who doesn't have that reputation, who has nothing to really lose when it comes to major incomes or major reputation or whatever it might be. A regular Goyish doctor doesn't have that type of skill, knowledge, nor reputation, might not care. But a person who has that reputation and has that skill and has that expertise, quite obviously, and therefore that's brought down by the Poskim as well. The Poskim point out that even though the Gemara therefore forewarns you not to therefore go to non-Jewish doctors who don't have that type of reputation or that type of expertise and worldwide renown, even though the Gemara said that, Bizman HaGemara, Bizman HaMishnah, Bizman HaZeh, we no longer have that concern, because Bizman HaZeh, in order to practice medicine, especially in countries that are civilized countries, you have to have a viable degree from a reputable medical school. You have to also have tremendous, proof from exams and other proofs that you are a certified doctor and specialist in the field that you claim that you have a specialty in. That's why you have to have not only degrees, but you have to have governmental certification. You have to have special types of licensing. I mean, until you become a practitioner, practicing doctor, a dentist, how many years you got to go to school, and how many exams you got to take, and how many tests you have to take, not only in school, but outside school, in order to ultimately be certified to give you the right to practice medicine. And Bizman HaZeh, you also have governmental agencies watching and supervising to make sure there's a quality control. And in most of the big medical institutions, there is a malpractice committee that if somebody basically feels there was a malpractice against them, to have somebody to go to in the hospital, even outside the hospital, for them to check, and therefore if they find out that could obviously the doctor malpracticed in treating you and cause you major physical harm or perhaps even cause your death, there's a legal system that could obviously will sue this person to the gazoo. So all of that today basically allows you to go to a non-Jewish doctor without a hesitation, with all the credentials and all the governmental supervision and everything else. And the Mefarshim say explicitly that if the Goyish doctor has greater expertise than the Jewish counterpart, you don't have to feel that because I'm a Jew, I got to go bedavka to a Jewish doctor rather than a non-Jewish doctor. You go to the best specialist that's available. And that is the meaning that we have that exists today when it comes to medical care throughout the Torah world. The best, the most qualified, the most specialized person with the greatest reputation and such is what could obviously doctors are basically sought after. There are, this applies to Rabbanim, applies to Rosh Yeshivas, applies to the laity. That's what everybody looks for. Now, it just so happens everybody claims the doctor is the best doctor. But the fact of the matter is the concerns the Gemara had, B'shas HaGemara, Baruch Shem today, we do not have. But this is what I want to show you as the beginning of tonight's topic. If you turn to the next page, from page 19 to page 28, so we hear the Gemara tells us that going back to Bizman HaGemara, if you had doctors who didn't have the governmental licensing or governmental supervision, didn't have all the qualities of a super specialist and reputation, so what happens if you were in a situation that you were sick, 50% chance you're going to live, 50% chance you're going to die, and the fact of the matter is that there is a chance that the doctor you go to, this guy, who doesn't have, you know, all the qualifications I mentioned before, he could save you or he could kill you. So if you have a 50% chance of living and dying even without him being involved, and you're dealing with a potential anti-Semitic doctor that can kill you, in that case the Gemara says, don't use that non-Jewish doctor, because since there's a 50% chance you can survive even without him, why even put yourself in any level of sakana? Now, comes along the Gemara, and we come now to the Ika part of today's sugya, but the Gemara says, but what happens if you have a person who is in a situation what's called chayesha, which means they are so sick with such an illness that this illness is definitely going to kill them, not 10%, 50%, 100% it's going to kill them, and they have either a week left, 2 weeks left, maybe even a couple of months left, but they're not going to live very much longer than that, so they're basically they only have what's called chayesha. And there's a geisha doctor out there who has a reputation that vis-a-vis the sickness that you have, this guy, even though we know he's an anti-Semite, but he has a skill and knowledge to be able to deal with your sickness, and in other cases of other people who had what you had on the level of what you have in the Sky Shah, he was able to cure them. So the question is, can I put my Chaye Shah, my momentary life, in danger for perhaps going to this doctor where if he healed other people with this, he might heal me, and give me what Chazal called Chay Olam, give me a prolonged life, do I have a right to take that type of chance? Because if I don't go to him at all, the person is definitely going to die, 100%. If I go to this doctor, maybe he will save me, maybe he won't save me, maybe he'll kill me, but the fact of the matter is, if I don't do anything, there's no chance of my salvation whatsoever. So the Gemara's psak is that when I have Chay Yeshua versus Chay Olam, Chazal say, I'm allowed to undertake the momentary endangerment of my Chaye Shah for the sake of perhaps obtaining, through this doctor's involvement, a Chaye Olam. And this applied even Bizman HaGemara, where these doctors didn't have the supervision that I mentioned before, and they were Choshed al Shvichas Adamim and hated Jews, I'd be allowed to, they could obviously put my Chaye Shah in momentary sacrifice for the sake of perhaps them curing me and giving me a prolonged existence. That's the psak of the Gemara based upon the Talmudic period and the Talmudic realities of that time. Now, quite obviously, Baruch Shem Bizman Hazeh, we don't have those types of doctors to worry about. So therefore, those shaylas are going to a goyish, a doctor, that he might kill me rather than, you know, than save my life. And the nisyonis, which they had mentioned in the Gemara, Chayesha versus Chayolam, those questions really do not come up today. But the questions that do come up today when it comes to Chayesha and Chayolam are the one I'm going to show you now. And what Chazal did, interesting enough, is they took a principle that you're allowed to sacrifice Chaye Shah for the sake of Chaye Olam. They took that principle from the Gemara over here, but they applied that lumdis to a different case entirely. And that's the case that's now Gei Halach Lamasa to tonight's lecture, and that is hazardous medical procedures. Turn the next page, let me show you what the case is. On page 20b, on the bottom of the page, you have a tshuv over here, this one over here, written by a Gadol whose name was Shelis and Shuvah Shvus Yaakov. He lived in the 1700s. He was what I would call the posek of the 1700s, one of the halachic medical ethicists of that time. A lot of the medical halach was paskened by him in his shalos and shuvas. He was like the Rav Moshe of his period when it came to the medicine of the 1700s. So listen to the shayla that was posed to him. Shayla ayin hey. Shayla says, Mirofe mumcha, there was a rofe mumcha, an expert doctor, concerning a specific chol echad, and I've noticed this is a rofe mumcha, an expert doctor, and what happens is shechol echol yov shekarav lamuspo. The patient unfortunately is now involved and enveloped in a disease that they're definitely going to die from it. The kol harofim amdim shavadai meis toch yom o yamayim. And when other doctors who are experts will also ask their opinion, they say the level of the sickness is such that this person is going to die either within the next 24 to 48 hours. However, all the doctors that were consulted make the following statement. Ela she'amdu she'yesh al refuah achas, that there is, however, one refuah that we all know of that exists, she'efsha, that it is possible, it is possible that it will cure this person even from this death-threatening illness. And how do they know this? Because it's worked before with people of the same exact level of sickness and it has cured them. However, we want you to know that gam ev shalahepich, but this medicine or this procedure is so dangerous that she'im, that what's going to happen is im yikach refuazu, if it doesn't have the proper reaction to the medical disease that he has, chas v'shalom, yomus miyat, it's going to immediately kill this person, take shosh time with the next hour or two. So imutra lasas revuzu, ochashin lechayeshah v'shel al tasa. So basically what they did is they rewrote the halach of Chaye Shah versus Chaye Olam in a different context entirely. The question is not concerning the bloodthirstiness of the doctor. We're dealing now here with doctors that are licensed, that are supervised, that are not going to cause, because of any animus, any person's loss of life. So the doctors are not the problem.
You are listening to Ben's talk.
The problem is the level of danger of the treatment that they want to have, that this specific treatment is so lethal that either it will cure the person and give them a prolonged existence, which means their Chaye Shah will be prolonged to Chaye Olam, and I'll define those parameters very shortly, or the person will have such a reaction to the chemical qualities of this medical care that it's going to have such a negative consequence that where they could have survived 24 to 48 hours, this medicine they're taking now will kill them within an hour and two. So whatever 24 to 40 hours they might have lived at Chaye Shah will be jeopardized by trying this type of medical care. Am I, as a doctor, allowed to administer this medicine? Is the patient, as a patient, allowed to undergo this risk for the sake of his Hatzalos Nefashos? Really, how dangerous this is, because you are potentially allowing himself and the doctor allowing to participate in risking whatever chayisha they have to get a chayi olam, but not allowing them even to live out the chayisha that God would have given them without any medical intervention whatsoever. That's the way the shayla was modernized, so to speak, in the 1700s to this very day. So the Mefarshim point out that, so you'll ask the obvious question, but the fact of the matter is, didn't I already quote you Rav Chaim HaKohen before, who says that what's the purpose of the Rapi Rape? To tell us that even though there's Mitzvah Hatzolos Nefashos, but you are allowed to put the Chola into greater Sakana to cure them from illness in order to save their life, and I'm giving you divine permission to do such. If there is such a pshat as Rav Chaim Cohen in the pshat of that Gemara, so what's the question? I mean, isn't it quite obvious that anytime you undergo medical treatment, there's always a possibility that you might die as a result of the operation or the medical care itself, whether there's a chemical or a medicine being put into your body, or there's radiation being used. You hear every day, people have all different types of negative reactions. If you already have a xeris akasif, that Rapi gives reshus for the doctor to do such and for the patient to accept such treatment, so what's the Gemara's question? And what is the Shaila and Shuvah's question? So now we got to give the Metzias over here. The question is the following. The question is, what is the level of danger that the medical care that you want to administer, and what's the rate of success in people who have undergone this treatment beforehand? And these two questions, when I'm going to define them for you right now, the way the post can define it, will explain why this specific Sheol Aviyah, Chai Shechaylam, is not covered by the Rapi Arape, the way Rav Chaim HaKohen mentioned before. Under normal circumstances, when it comes to medical treatment, most surgical procedures for most cholim, or most medical procedures for most cholim, usually under most circumstances when the question of obligating the doctor to practice and obligating the patient to partake, there is most of the time at least 50% chance it will succeed, a 50% chance it will not succeed. Which means to say, there are statistics showing you that at least 50% will succeed, and most of the time, even more than 50% people are cured by this operative procedure or are cured by this medical care. So if that's the case, where you have 50% chance of living and not dying and being cured from the illness that you have through the surgery or through the medicine, so in that case, where you have such a success or 50% or more, you are, as a doctor, mechuyev to treat this person, as a patient, mechuyev to allow yourself to be treated. And the fact of the matter is, since there is a law of samad adam riacha, if we didn't have a secular rule of informed consent, which you have like in America, but you only had Jewish law to rely upon, you could theoretically force the chola to have to accept the medical treatment even against their will because of the law of samad adam riacha, and such as paskin based upon Jewish law in the Mahaksir of Yaakov Emden Paskin, this in his parish to Shulchan Aruch, and his psak is quoted as well by the Mishnah Berurah in Simin Shin Chav Ches in Hilchos Shabbos, where that's brought down. But that's where 50% plus chance of success in the medical treatment. Here over here, we're dealing in a case that the success rate, to quote Rav Moshe, is sofik rachok miyo. Forget about 50% chance of success. The medicine or the surgery we're talking about doesn't even reach 40% or 30% and 20%, 10%, maybe 5% of the people might be nitzel. So the question is, when you have such a dangerous either surgery or such a dangerous medical treatment or radiation treatment where the success rate is so minimal in nature, that is not covered by the Rapi Arape Rav Chaim HaKohen's drush before, that Hashem is giving you theological permissibility to put the chola in danger in order for you, basically speaking, halach lamasa, to cure this person. When you don't have 50% rate of success, but it's all going downhill, the halach is even a suffik rachik miyod. If you paskin as the ultimate psak of this Shvus Yaakov is he says that our Gemara that says you can sacrifice chaya shofa chaya olam allows the chola and the doctor, if they both acquiesce, to undergo this dangerous risk, which means to undergo a medical cure where even a safek rachak mi'od of success is possible. But the statistics show that most people who've undergone this medical treatment have not survived and died, and they forfeited their chayei shoah. So the chiddush of our Gemara in Masechtas Avodah Zarah applied to the case in the Shela of the Shus Yaakov is that in this case there's no longer a chiv upon the doctor to treat the patient and force the patient to undergo the medical treatment based upon how dangerous it is and how unlikely the success is going to be. There's surely no chiv upon the patient to undergo any type of kafir or be forced to feel that they're obligated to undergo this medical treatment or surgery based upon the minimal amount of success of other people. And therefore, me'ika hadin, if the doctor says, I don't want to take a chance, and the patient says, I don't want to undergo taking the chance, and whatever chayisha I have left, so be it. They're not in violation of any mitzvah, say rapi arape, they're not violating hashivosolo, there's no violation of samara damriacha. The chiddush of this specific Gemara and psak of the Shvus Yaakov is not the fact that you can refrain. The chiddush is that you're allowed to take the risk. That's the chiddush. That means that even though you realize that the success rate is so minimal, if the patient undertakes the risk and nebuch works out negative for them, in Shemaim it's not considered as if you committed suicide. And the doctor who is willing to do this medical treatment, realizing how dangerous it is, halacha lamas, if it ends up not going well for the patient dies, he's not looked upon in Shemaim as being a murderer, which meant to say there is a divine sanction over here to have the ability to sacrifice your chayei shoah if there is a chayei olam procedure that can give you longevity, which means it's a permission to do such. It is not a halachic obligation. And just to think of the parameters over here. Now,
that only 10%, what if it's 55%? Is there a cutoff point?
50% and above, you're mechuyev. But this is anything less than 50%.
How much lower?
Even 5% chance of success.
4%?
4%. Safek, no, they don't give it, they say safek, rachok, miyod, all the way down to the end of the test tube. Now, what I want to, however, mention to you is that even though that's the psak given by the Shvus Yaakov, there's some parameters that I have to mention now over here in order to fill out the whole picture and to give you a shleimus in understanding the inyan. When the Shvus Yaakov was asked the question, quite obviously, so he quite obviously he quotes this Gemara I just showed you over here, and he points out that even though ironically the Gemara says in Masechtas Yoma that we are normally choshes for chayishah, the Gemara quotes a case of a person who Nebuch was on in a building that an earthquake took place with on Shabbos. The building collapsed upon the person. When Hatzalah came on the scene, so the Gemara describes on Pehei Masechtas Yoma, they found the person under this rubble. They saw that there was tremendous cranial damage. The term that's used is merutzatz mocho, which means the cranium was basically crushed, but the person was still alive, they were still breathing, the heart was still pumping. And the question is, if they leave them here under the rubble, they're definitely going to die that Shabbos, they have chayishah. If they extract the person from the rubble, they're so medically damaged, they're also going to die that Shabbos. The only question is whether they're going to live a little longer, a little shorter, depending upon removing them from the rubble, and therefore easing the trauma, but they're surely not going to survive that Shabbos. So you're dealing with a chayla who became a chayla because of a collapsed building on that Shabbos, only have chayishah. So the Gemara says, even svek svekas about pekuach nefesh, you're allowed to mechal Shabbos for chayishah, with all Isur Daraisa to give that person a couple extra minutes or seconds of life. So Chai Yeshua is a very, very powerful thing when it comes to Torah. You know, human life is of infinite divine value. That's the crucial factor. Every moment of human life is of infinite. Despite that fact, He quotes over here the Shvus Yaakov that the Balei Taisis asked this as a stira. The Gemara Yomah says Chashin Lechayishon Efi Mechal Shabbos to give this person a little more Lechayishon Shabbos and extract them from the rubble so that they live a little longer. So you're worried for Chayishon. Here you're allowing the Gemara and Avodah Zarah to sacrifice whatever definite Chayishon you have left for a Chayolam, and therefore giving the medical community the ability to even weaken and destroy the Chayesha that the person has naturally left. Not to lengthen it, but to even diminish it. So isn't that a contradiction? So Tosos answers in Masechtas Avodah Zarah that the actual answer is don't use just terms Chayesha and Chayesha as a kasha upon each other. In each situation you do what is best for the patient, and therefore, imesech des yoma, you're talking about extracting the person from the rubble and taking away the trauma and letting them live a little longer, since that's the only option you have available, and the person is still alive, we're giving you the dispensation, the mechalal Shabbos deraisa to do such. In the case of Avodah Zarah, where you have a choice now to let the person stay in a chayesha mode, or perhaps use a dangerous medical procedure that has the ability of prolonging their life in a tremendous fashion, in that case, the sacrifice of their Chayesha is not showing indifference to the Chayesha, but on the contrary. You also want to prolong their Chayesha to make it even better, a Chayolam. So in both cases, you do what is beneficial for the patient. That's the way Tosfos answers. There should not be a contradiction between the specific sugyas. Says the Shvus Yaakov, however, in order for us to paskin this way, I give you the following prerequisite. And look at the end of the tshuva where he basically spells it out. He says, I want you to know, and this is where my finger is, right, based on the last five lines of the Shvus Yaakov in his tshuva. He therefore says, therefore imkain, Kevin Shavada Yomo, since this person is going to definitely die based upon all the specialists' analysis of the disease he has, we therefore manichim as havada v'tovsin asolek ula yisrapa. Perhaps maybe he'll be lucky and be cured by this medical care. Umakamakam ein lasseis harefi kibeshuto kain. A doctor shouldn't automatically decide to do this himself. Rach tzarech lios mosim ba'obedava, that you have to be careful in your deliberation and what you're doing, and therefore Levakeach imrofa mumchim here, ask other doctors their opinion. As a doctor, what they would do in your place, would they agree with your assessment? Vapirov hadeos tahin ruba de mincha shukafo, lafishiesh laholi shalkaledas, alkayayasa, rarov hadeos harofim, haskamas chachim shebir, kainir release. What did he answer? He says that where normally rov means 51%. In order for you as a doctor to undertake the achrayus and the responsibility to do a dangerous surgery or a medical procedure where this person's chayishur could be undermined instantly by doing it, here 51% ain't sufficient. He says you need a ruba deminka, which means you need at least 70% of doctors, other doctors who you spoke to concur with your assessment that this person is definitely going to die, that this is the only medical cure that's available, and that it has helped other people in the past, even though there is a minority who benefited from it. If you have 70% of other doctors that acquiesce that this is the only chance he has, then you, as the specialist in this case, can therefore take upon yourself the achrayus to try to attempt it. If the patient wants to do it, and you are willing to do it, and you have rove of other doctors saying this is the only answer, and if we were in your position and the patient was willing to do it, we would try and attempt to do it ourselves. So therefore, that's the first major chiddush. You need ruba deminka over here of second opinions to do it. That's number one. Number two, you need a rav to paskin this, which means you just can't rely upon the doctor's acquiescence. You need a person who's a medical ethicist, a rav who's a pesek, who understands medicine and understands the halacha, to hear all the options to say, I'm giving you the halachic rishus to do this type of dangerous procedure. That's number two. Number three, and this is a crucial factor, this only works with a refuah which Chazal called a refuah beduka. The term that Chazal uses is
refuah beduka, a time and tested medical procedure. Now this concept of refuah beduka, I'm going to get back to very shortly, but that is another. You just can't stamazai and use any medicine. It has to have been a refuah that's been nivdak, was like an FDA-approved medical procedure as a surgery or a medicine or a radioactive therapy. It has to have demonstrated efficacy and been approved by the authorities for you to risk this person's life in administering it. And finally, another major factor is, what is the hope of gain of life, of longevity, to say willing to sacrifice chayi shev chayi olam? How long is chayi olam? What's the bare minimal statistical lifespan of expansion you could hope that could be accomplished by putting this person in this jeopardy where they're going to live only maybe 48 hours? And if you give them this medicine and it works wrong, they'll die in an hour and two. What's the chayi olam that you're trying to accomplish? So Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva upon this, and he quotes in the name of the Darchei Tshuva, which is a parish on Yerideya, quoting Rav Shlomo Klug and others, that chaya ola means that you have to be able, with this type of medical procedure, give this person, if it succeeds, at least a year's lifespan, which means take them out of the gedda of being a treifa to be a non-treifa. Because if a person is only going to live for a couple of days or a couple of months and not live a year, he has the din of a treifa lahalacha, like an animal. If a person or an animal lives more than a year, it means that you're not a treifa. You have to have had substantial proof from this medicine being used in previous cases, even though it's a Safek Racham Od, that the longevity that this medicine was able to accomplish is either conquering the disease entirely, that would be wonderful, but at least to expand their life from a day or two or for a couple of months to entire more than 12 months plus. If you therefore have demonstrated, which has been demonstrated in the medical community, that there is a possibility of chayi olam, of at least giving the person at least a year's life or more, that's another provision that has to be in order to utilize this. If it's only going to grant a person, basically instead of living 3 months, they'll be able to live 6 months, you're just making him from one treifa to another treifa. That's not considered enough right to put this person in that type of endangerment. But if you can change him and bring him out of the matzav of treifus and give him at least yud beis chodesh or more, that is therefore the prolongation that you have to, and you need statistics to prove it's been done in the past for you to attempt it on this person. But now we come to the most delicate of all the questions. And I alluded to it before, but now I'm going to mention it now. And that is the following question. We therefore see that the Rav Kuffel of acquiescence of other doctors is needed. We see that you need a Rav to paskin the Shela, who's a mumcha, to say, I'm giving you permission to do such. I pointed out to you that halacha lamasa, there has to be at least a prolongation possibility of chayolim, at least 12 months and such. I pointed out to you that this procedure is an option mitzad the chayla and mitzad the doctor. If they do absolutely nothing, the person dies. None of them are chayv in shemayim for having, which means there's no violation of any lavim, of bitul aseis. Both have a right in shemayim to justify the shavi al tasa, not doing anything. But what constitutes a refuah beduka? Now this is interesting. I'm going to give you a machlokus now you should be aware of. And I'll tell you honestly that I think over time, and what I see happening in the medical community today, things have changed based upon the advent of modern medicine that we have today. Going back to the time of antiquity, in the Tekufas HaRishonim, when it came to defining what is called a refuah beduka, so I'm going to give you two possibilities. One, what I would call the classical Shitas HaRashi, which I would say represented, at least at that time, I would say the consensus of most Rishonim and later Poskim, and the alternate approach of the Shitas HaRamba. I'm going to give you what they each say, and you'll see why there's a major difference between them. According to Rashi, what is considered a refuah beduka? So the English translation of its Hebrew definition is a medical procedure whose therapeutic efficacy has already been established by the medical community, which means it's an FDA-approved procedure. That's a refuah beduka. So therefore, quite obviously, using Rashi's interpretation,
In order for you to be able to save a person who is in a matzav v'chayishof v'chayolam, you have to have a real, reputable, FDA, governmental, institutional approved drug or medical treatment in order to allow the sakana to the chola and the operative procedure of the doctor. That would be Shita Sarashi. And I would say, by and large, that was probably the Shita practiced for most of world history up until perhaps the 20th and 21st century. The Rambam, however, has a different definition. And it's interesting, the Rambam lived in the 1200s, so could obviously, in his time, he claimed you could rely upon him. What was the Rambam's opinion? So the Rambam's opinion is, what's considered halach lamasa refu beduka? So says the Rambam the following, listen to this. He says, even an experimental therapy based on cogent scientific reasoning indicating probable or possible success, he will be willing to basically categorize that as a refuah biduka. I'll read it again for you. Even an experimental therapy based upon cogent scientific reasoning indicating probable or possible success, he is willing to basically call that a refuah biduka, which means he does not need FDA institutional proof and basically guarantee. Even an experimental therapy that's in the course of being proven could be used. Now, what I want to say to you is that what many people are not aware of is that even though up until our Tekufa, I would say by and large, Refua Beduka that the Shvus Yaakov meant and all the other poskim who discussed it was classic Lefi Shitas Rashi's interpretation. But in today's generation, with what's going on in the scientific universe today, especially as it relates to cancer treatments, when it comes to what's offered to patients now in Sloan Kettering and all the reputable institutions around the world, you have all different types of treatments that they give to cancer patients where the normal stuff doesn't work. They try the normal stuff first. If the normal stuff doesn't work, which is surely a refuah biduka according to Shita Sarashi, if that doesn't work, then they start with what's called the trials. And there are medicines that have already reached phase 3. There are types of chemotherapy that have only reached phase 2. And there are some types of chemotherapy, especially with the latest and greatest forms of stem cell types of things that are still now within phase 1 that are now being practiced by the medical community in Sloan Kettering and all the major reputable research centers in trying to cure this person from an incurable cancer. And the fact of the matter is the greatest of the Rebbes and the Ga'inim and the Gedolim who go to these hospitals and Nebuch are stricken with these diseases undertake these types of therapies, which according to Rashi would be halakhically forbidden to do, because the downside that when they give you a thing, a form to sign as informed consent, I mean, I remember I took my Rebbe in Alei HaShalom to the hospital in Sloan, and they used to give us, when it came to the various therapies, the simple version of 13, 14, 15 pages of informed consent of what this is all about. So besides the doctor's explanation, they want you to read the form and listen and try to understand and comprehend the ramifications. The fact of the matter is that some of the treatments that they did after the regular stuff did not work was phase 3, which is pretty close to, you know, to Rashi. But they, after a while, when phase 3 stuff didn't work and phase 2 didn't work, they try to convince you the only thing we have left is phase 1, but that's up to you if you want to attempt and try to use it. We can't guarantee anything. These are the potential sfeikos. Informed consent made that they had to tell you all the various consequences. And the fact is, lahalacha lamasa, I can tell you today that in the world of practicing medical halacha, especially in the world of cancer treatment and things of that level, that without the Shita Sarambam, you couldn't undergo those types of alternative treatments based upon, you know, Shita Sarashi. According to Shita Sarambam, if it's an experimental therapy based upon cogent scientific reasoning, which this stuff is, and there's an indication, probable or possible success, and all of these, if you've ever read the presentations, paint an incredible potential picture of what this type of medicine can do and this type of treatment can do. And it's, you know, this is like a special, like a smart missile pill that doesn't go through the rest of your body, but it goes straight to the cancer and therefore it hatches on now. It's like, you know, a missile that has special technical guardian skills to know exactly where to go in the body. I mean, they portray it with a beautiful picturesque scale, but the fact is, it's still basically experimental. That in today's society, where a person has chayesha, where they're saying that the person, the cancer is spreading, and they realize this person is in a matzah of a chayesha, for the hope of chaye olam, they rely heavily on the Rambam's opinion today, or else a lot of the procedures being done in Sloan Kettering could never ever be performed. So therefore what I want, but the fact of the matter is, if the patient does not want to do those types of therapies, mm-hmm. and says thank you with no thank you, in Shemayim, then I looked upon as committing suicide, and the doctors are not considered violating the Lashana Zamayacha or being Mavapa Mr. Rapi Yarape. They have a right to say, since it's such a dangerous procedure, because when they give you the side effects, that if this specialized missile medicine does not do what it's supposed to do when hitting the target, this is the potential negative ramifications of what it can do instead and harm to your body. So quite obviously, in today's mode of medical treatments, the expansion of Refuah Beduka has basically expanded incredibly based upon the scientific knowledge and medical understanding we have today. The Mea Chazal, when they wrote what they wrote, in the time of Rashi, the Rambam, and most of the Rishonim, and even in the early Achronim and such, the type of scientific knowledge we had when it came to medical care and all of the knowledge that we possess then does not compare to the medical knowledge we have today when it comes to all the scientific phenomena we have in understanding disease and understanding how the body works. With all the technology and all the knowledge we have today, it's simply, it's a different world. I mean, the CRISPR technology you have today, when it comes to that, when it comes to stem cells, they didn't have that stuff then. And the way the body worked, if you look at most of the medicines of the Rishonim, they were basically dietetic. Basically, it was foods, drinks, eat this or don't drink this. Even the Rambam, who at that time was looked upon as the, you know, the great doctor of his generation, it was primarily dietary. They didn't do too many procedures of surgery, except maybe the Hakazas Adam, you know, etc. But otherwise, you know, surgery really didn't become an art of surgical procedures, especially in Europe, until the 1700s and 1800s, when at that time, in medical school, you should know, in Europe, which is run by, the medical schools were basically run by the churches, they did not allow doctors who were studying medicine, when it comes to learning anatomy, to do dissection of corpses until approximately 1500s, 1600s. Believe it or not. In China, they did it 1,000 years earlier than that. You know, China, they never had problem about, you know, basically doing a dissection of bodies, etc., etc. But in Europe, because of the church, they held back. But in the 1500s, 1600s, they started realizing that we ain't going to advance our medicine. And look what they're holding, they're the Chinese. So they started teaching anatomy by doing dissection of cadavers. So by the time you hit the 1700s, you'll have shaylas being given to the Nodav Yud or to the Shvus Yaakov about surgical procedures, which today, you know, I'll give you a person has a gallstone or something like that. So those procedures were starting to be done already at that specific tekufa. And at that time, since they already had medical knowledge based upon their anatomical knowledge that was being taught to them, those types of preliminary early surgeries could be done, but they sure didn't have the medical knowledge we have today on the sophisticated level we have today. So it could be that based upon the level of our knowledge of medicine, how medicine works, and all the things, corroborative things we have today, to basically monitor what's going on with all the machinery, it could be that even the Rambam's interpretation today, with all the other stuff we have, would therefore raise the experimental up to a different level than it was when the Rambam mentioned it going back to the 1200s. So the Rabbi said that basic answer to the ultimate question tonight is that halacha lamasa, can a person sacrifice chayisha chayolam? The answer is, it's a rishus, yes. But you need all the prerequisites I mentioned before. And if you decide and opt out, you have done nothing wrong. It's our doctor and it's our patient. And if you decide to opt in, and nebuchadnezzar ends up being an unsuccessful procedure, the patient hasn't committed suicide and the doctor hasn't committed any murder. I'll end off with a little story, if you have time, for 2 minutes, and I'll let you go. Many, many years ago, about 35 years ago, even more, I was already at that time involved very heavily in medical ethics, teaching it at that time at YU. So I was at that time a Rav in Hillcrest, Queens, in the Torah Center. And there was a balabas who was very sick in the hospital. Balabas who had a tremendous kidney failure. And therefore, as a result of that, he had to undergo continual processes of cleaning his body out. Using what? When you're
bleeding.
What? Dialysis. The only thing available to clean his body out from all the poisons was dialysis. I get an emergency call from his wife that she's in the hospital, and the doctors have looked and they say all the portals, the possible portals that they know of that were in his body that they used to do dialysis with are all clogged and they can't do it anymore. So there's nothing they can do based upon Bahu Shehu Sham in his treatment. But they would like me to give him the permission to take him into the operating room and to do a little surgery, and maybe they'll be able to find a portal and therefore put him back into dialysis. So should I acquiesce and sign off, Rabbi? So I said, before you sign anything, let me come to the hospital and speak to the doctors. So I went to the hospital and I took the doctor into a private room and I said to him, I asked him the following question. First I asked him to explain to him medically what's going on, and then I asked him, what do you want to do? He says, we want to take him into the operating room, and basically we're going to open him up, like we'll have till you do a dissection on a frog, and see if there's anything we can find that is a possible opening. And if we find something, we'll be able to connect him and do dialysis. So I asked him one question. Did you ever do this before? Or I'll go one step further. Has this ever been done before by any medical institution that you know around the world? So they said, if you're asking it that way, we have to be honest, no. So it means what you really want to do is use this man as a guinea pig, but you didn't tell that to his wife. You told his wife, oh, we'll take him into the operating room and we'll open him up. And what? I said, if you would have told his wife that you want to be the first in the world to use him as a guinea pig and maybe succeed in what you'd want to do, that's basically what you want to do over here. Well, yeah, I guess the way you're saying it, that's what we want to do, but that's not what you disclose in your informed consent to his wife. So I went out to the wife and I said, there's no refuah bedukas that these people have available. And all the alternative is to leave him status quo, bring him home, give him hospice care, and let whatever happens, happens, but at least whatever life he has left that God has given him, because he can't do dialysis anymore, at least it won't be jeopardized, because if they put him on that operating table, the doctor admitted to me, the 99% he ain't gonna come out alive that day, he's gonna die on that operating table. So what that shows you is that you just can't take things for granted. And as a medical ethicist, you have to go and confront the medical community to ask them, what are you doing over here, to know whether to give your acquiescence or not when they say they want to do procedures. This was not a refuah beduka according to anybody's definition, even according to the Rambam's definition, because it was purely, they were experimenting to see something as a guinea pig. So, and the person basically was able to survive another week. He died in hospice care, in his home, with his loved ones around him. It was a very emotional thing, but at least he had whatever chayisha he had left, and he died with their dignity and their covers. So Rabbi Sai, never take anything for granted, and when people want to do things, check out before you sign off, and you check off to say, I'm willing to acquiesce. Rabbi Sai, a good tenacher, a bench
tenacher. Can you sacrifice Chayri Olam for pain and bring it to Chayisha?
What do you, give me an example.
Somebody's in excruciating pain from cancer, and they have a treatment for him. that he's going to be in excruciating pain.
It's to take alleviate the excruciating pain.
No, he might be in the excruciating pain. You're continuing the condition. You're just keeping him alive.
You're keeping the person alive. You're not curing the old cancer.
No, that's correct.
So that's an important factor. So that comes under a different machlokes, which we paskin a kula on. And that is when you're dealing with a medical treatment on a disease, where the disease is not being cured by this medical type of activity. The only thing you're doing is you're prolonging the person's existence, because this is basically retarding the disease from doing what it normally does. But you'll be marichayov, feel good. You'll be marichayov by giving this person tremendous pain in the interim. So when you come to that type of matzav where there's no therapeutic positive benefit from the medical treatment, you just prolong the person in pain, etc. At that point, Rav Moshe Feinstein, you know, Karabach Zatzal, and the poskim that I and others rely upon hold that the medical treatment key of Arape no longer applies, and therefore it's really up to the chola or his surrogates to make a decision whether you want to prolong your life in pain and anguish, or you just want to, basically speaking, let life take its course and no longer treat. But over there, they make a divide between two things. They make a divide between what they call the therapeutic care of Rapi Arape, which they say no longer is required in that case, but biological maintenance of the body, which means to give the person artificial hydration, nutrition, pain medicine, and stuff like that, and if they need artificial oxygen as well, to keep them going until they die, to make it as painless as possible. That is your obligation at that point in time, which means they call that biological maintenance to the end and minimalization of pain. But to treat with medicine, to force the person to have to accept treatment, in this case, to give them all different types of medical care, merely you're prolonging, you're not going to arrest the disease. Right. And to have to suffer through pain, that is something that you're not mechuyev to do. And that becomes an option which the patient or his surrogate to make a decision. So that's what we pass on Allah for the masan.
You have been listening to a presentation of benstorah.com.